Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. On the show today, I'm going to address some questions that have come to me through emails of listeners. And I'm very pleased to have these questions because they've evoked some very long thought processes in me. This is the first one, and it's from a man in Canada who's a longtime Reiki practitioner. And he says, there's a very interesting paradox came up for me during this show. And he's talking about the last show with Margaret Crumb. In my search for better health, I thought that receiving Reiki was a protection against illness. With my experience thus far, this appears not to be the case. It seems we have to do everything we possibly can to work on better health, and it is still a cosmic lottery or a funny time. Well, this particular sharing has a wonderful potential. First of all, I really love the word paradox. It is definitely a paradox in the sense that we search for something that is sort of like going to be our cure-all or our thing that rescues us from physical disease and so on. And yet, on the other hand, the deeper we go into physical illness, there seems to be this other component which has nothing to do with the physicality of the body, but has to do with this partnership with the physical body of our spirit, which means that we carry in with us, if you believe this part, certain propensities for different conditions, or perhaps even genetically, we carry in a leaning toward or a possibility of different conditions. And is there anything in this world that can actually prevent that kind of possibility from occurring? Well, that in itself is a great question. I think that it can be answered on a lot of different levels. But taking the answer from what I experience in my own Reiki practice, I would say that in my experience, there have been a lot of things that I have avoided, we should say, and I will use the word avoided, because I had Reiki. I feel like that I made decisions about my life. For instance, I stopped smoking. I knew that smoking wasn't good for me, and sometimes it felt like uncontrollable, but there has been a lot of support for me in stopping smoking, and so I feel like that has really changed a pattern of my health. I'm drawn to eat things that I feel like are healthy for me in that moment, and if I can pay attention to what my body wants, most of the time I would prevent eating or doing things that are not beneficial to my body. But sometimes I just have very little will, and I go out and eat an ice cream sundae or something, knowing that this is not what my body wants to eat right now. And the other thing is that it's like, the question for me is, does illness happen to us? Well, this is a really interesting question. There's a part of me that feels that we create the conditions for our own illnesses, and those conditions are not always conscious. I feel like as we build our patterns of the way that we eat, the way that we sleep, what rules our life, how much water we drink, the kind of water we drink, and all these different things, that we actually come to a place where we really nourish either our health or those things that come to us that allow us to see that we're not really on the right track for our own bodies. So maybe this is what he's talking about as far as the cosmic lottery. I don't know. But I don't feel like it's particularly a lottery. And then, then we have these people who smoke, drink, and live till they're 96 in pretty good health, but they've been active all their lives, or they've just happened to live in a great environment. So, how can we protect against illness? Well, I don't feel that Reiki is a protection against illness, and it's too bad that this was, maybe it's too bad, I don't know, that he took Reiki in order to protect against illness. I feel like illness is something not to be protected against, but to welcome. That we have in our bodies a warning system, and there are little things that happen to us that are like the first line of warning, then there's the second line of warning, and then there's the third line of warning. And of course, eventually, we may pick up an illness or a condition that allows us the possibility to die. And the question then comes up, is dying a failure of life? And this has always been a very potent question for the allopathic medicine people, as well as a lot of us, because we have this idea that we can control when we die and when we're born. And especially now, we're on the verge of not just of real test tube babies. So what happens to this whole theory of karma and of souls meeting and so on when life becomes regulated or chosen so much that the cosmic lottery isn't really in operation? And is there some sense to the cosmic lottery? So you can see that this particular paragraph just brought up a lot of questions for me and very, very few answers. If we're looking for something that's a cure-all for disease, well, Reiki's certainly not it. But what Reiki does, as far as I'm concerned, is it allows me to benefit on all levels and have the maximum benefit on all levels of any condition that I have in my body. I'm not a perfect being. I don't consider that anybody could be a perfect being. And I'm not sure that the avoidance of illness and imperfection is necessarily a goal that I want to pursue or even contemplate. I'm willing to celebrate my basic good health, and I feel like that comes from a lot of different factors, including having Reiki and doing self-treatment every day. This is another question from a listener. Dear Phyllis, my mother is very sick. She has cancer. She also is a Reiki master who would like to teach my daughter Reiki. She is wondering whether or not she can still teach and give Reiki to others now that she is sick. Well, I will go back to my grandmother. And in answering this, and say that my grandmother said that you can teach if you can and want to. And I found what she meant by this is that there are times when I don't really have the feeling of giving Reiki. I don't know what my resistance is, and I don't know if it's an illness inside of me. Sometimes I feel like I'm just tired. Sometimes I feel like I'm ill. And other times, even though I'm very ill, I still want to teach. Does it really make a difference? And this brings me to one of my theories that is hard to articulate. I feel that in teaching Reiki, for instance, the best thing that I can bring to the class is being present. And there are degrees of presence. When I feel very healthy and I'm rested, I've had, you know, a good night's sleep, and I want to be where I am, then the class gets the best of me, I would say. When I feel that I have I used to have bronchitis a lot and would teach through this bronchitis, sometimes I wondered if, in fact, it was beneficial for students. And my experience was that the students got what they came for and what they had ears for. And that having bronchitis, as long as I was willing to be there and be as present as possible, was fine. So my answer to this Reiki master who would like to teach her granddaughter Reiki is, can she be present enough to do the initiations, teach as she would ordinarily, and be present during the class? And if she says yes to those things, then I feel like no matter what, she can teach. She can give treatments as long as she's willing and able. There, underlying this, though, there is another question, and I feel like this question is something that kind of lurks with lots of Reiki people, and that is, can I transfer my state of mind or my state of being to the other person as I give them Reiki? And I would say no, it's not my experience. In the last years, since I have been giving and receiving Reiki, I've received Reiki from people who have, you know, a broken leg or have been on psychotropic drugs or been on different kinds of medications or been very tired, and yet the Reiki that I've received has been wonderful. And I don't notice that there's any difference. Now, maybe I'm just insensitive, but I feel that, you know, Reiki comes to us and it's pure in the sense that we don't affect Reiki. Reiki affects us. So I think that it's very important to let go of this idea that as people, as human beings, we are, quote, the masters of the universe. And there are things and energies that we cannot control, that we cannot influence, and that run through us unaltered. And one of these is Reiki. So this is not a matter of, will the energy of Reiki be changed because this Reiki master has cancer? The question is, how will Reiki change her in her treatment of cancer and how she is with cancer with her students and her practice? This is a letter that I received. It's a newsletter from Pamela Miles, who's a New York Reiki master. And I really loved it, and it was very inspiring for me, so I wanted to share it with you. Dear Phyllis, 49 Reiki practitioners offered Reiki treatment to 120 women being treated for cancer on Sunday, June 13th. This was the fourth Reiki room at the annual JCC Spa Day for women with cancer. Every year, the women lie down on treatment tables and allow 2 to 3 strangers to lightly place hands. 20 minutes later, they open their eyes and bless the practitioners with big smiles. The experience is wonderful for the guests and for the practitioners. What's not so wonderful is that even this year, although Reiki is now available in cancer care more than other areas of medicine, the majority of these women had no prior Reiki experience. How are we going to change that? How can we seed public awareness of Reiki? Holding public Reiki events is one way, and is a particularly effective, enjoyable, and rewarding way. Why not bring a Reiki experience to your community? Host an event where they'll all but trip over it in their daily lives. Make it easy for them to have their first taste of Reiki. Make it a comfortable, supported experience and tell them how they can follow up if they want more. I hope that some of you are inspired by this because, you know, sometimes there has been I think there is this another, I'll use paradox again. There has been this paradox of using the oral tradition while at the same time wondering how to get the word out, and there is an important difference here. Are we creating a public event to get more Reiki students? Are we creating a public event to simply raise the awareness of Reiki so that it can be a choice? Or are we being a little bit of pushy with our Reiki and putting it out there to people who might not appreciate it? Well, I think that this all depends on the attitude of the people involved who are organizing the event. So if you're going to organize something like a public awareness event for Reiki, then do so, but be really clear about your motivation, because that motivation will affect the outcome of your event. And I feel that this is a very important give and take when you're putting that out. So don't be afraid to ask, and I'm sure that Pamela would be very willing to coach people about public awareness events for Reiki. And I'm sure that you can find her on the internet. Her name is Pamela Miles. That's M-I-L-E-S. This is my next one. This is from a woman named Badina. She's from Tashkent, Uzbekistan. And the email that she sent was translated for me by one of her students. And she asks a very interesting question. Or I would say presents a very interesting scenario for us to think about. Your illness set me thinking about the mystic order, about what does Reiki want to say to us through you. There is an opinion that cancer is an offense, and the breast is a symbol of maternity, nutrition, like the relationship between mother and child. In another way, we could say in the community of Reiki, the relationship between a master and a student. Many questions are raised after we think about this. What kind of relationship must be between master and a student? What is the free relationship? What gives rise for mutual offenses, and so on. There is the truth, man changes and the environment changes. But how does this happen? Through my practice, I saw changes in my children after I changed the negative relations in myself. And that happened without any word, without any explanations as the changes take place. And it is amazing. I don't need to worry and be anxious. The main thing is to change and foster myself, and the rest is coming through the chain. The source of virus dies off, and the virus dying comes through the whole genetics. After all, I displace these considerations to the relationship between master and a student. The same thing happened. The student is tied together with the master in some kind of genetics, and there are things that pass on from one generation to the other. For instance, in Usui, there are individual features of every master. That means that every student finds their own master. My changes touch my students without fail. Even if there is no personal contact, the Reiki circles are the change catalyst. It is hard to describe all these thoughts with words. After these discoveries in myself, the worry for the student's life after initiation fell away. I started to get an inside freedom and cultivating the Reiki practitioner inside of myself, that's what I choose. Being just a conduit without a promissory note. Your illness made all these thoughts, and I saw the relationships between an immature master and their masters. And I gave myself a promise that I would not initiate somebody as a master until they feel the readiness. Well, this sharing raised a lot of questions in me. And first of all, I want to go back through this and just talk about some of the words that just flashed at me. One of them is genetics. You know, I've talked from very early days about what I saw, something that I called spiritual genetics. It was like if I had an issue in my life, it felt like students were drawn to me that either had the same issue or had presence in that issue somehow. I find this really fascinating, and it gets more fascinating when I've initiated a master, because I feel that, well, I don't know what actually happens, but I feel that a part of me and a part of my attitude, my approach to Reiki, my approach to life gets passed on through the initiation. Now, I don't know if this is really true, but it's something that I've always believed in, and I quite often see it manifest in the masters that I've initiated. And she also has feels like that she's observed this in other master-student relationships, and especially in her own students. So the other question that she brings up is, then, how much is the master responsible for the relationship with the student? Well, I would say that if a master pursues his or her own path, dedicated through Reiki, that the students will shift and change with that master, much like she talks about, sort of at a very blood level or something, rather than something that comes through the mind. And this is my experience also, that if I shift and change, something else shifts and changes in my, what I would call, my Reiki students. We can move over and talk about this very recent, what should I say, philosophy of the family constellation work, and that is that the first premise is that we are all one, and that we all can be anything for each other, and that we can tap into the universal consciousness and be able to pick up naturally someone else's role in a certain situation. So one of the, for those of you who don't know about family constellation work, one of the things that happens in the constellation work is that somebody describes an issue in a family, in their family, not just any family, but their family. And in their description, they talk about maybe their mother and their father and maybe a brother or something. And then they go to the people who are in the group with them, and they choose somebody to stand in for their mother, someone to stand in for their father, and someone to stand in for their brother. And as the interactions begin, which is on an more on an energetic level and rather than a word level, so it's not really role-playing in the psychological sense, but it's holding the energy of that person. Excuse me. So sometimes, well, all the time that I've seen it, and that's been a lot, and, you know, this is the success and the most magical part of family constellation work is that having been chosen to stand in for someone, you just get how they were in relationship to the person calling the constellation. And it's really miraculous. The interesting thing is that after the constellation, there's a resolution, because the constellation creates a resolution on one level. And once that resolution happens, the whole family is shifted, without any of the other family knowing it. So many times people who have been in family constellation work have gone back home and something happens immediately that they have always wanted to happen or that was played out in the family constellation work and now it's being manifest in real life in the family. So this same understanding that we are all one, that we can connect and stand in for each other, and that a student is somehow linked to their master, and that if their master shifts something, their students will shift something, really makes sense to me. Now, the next question then is, are masters responsible for their students? And I would say absolutely not. This particular understanding is not to be meant as a pressure on the master to be perfect, but perhaps some kind of pressure on the master to take their next steps, to know that their job isn't done just because they've taught somebody first and second degree. Being a good student is just as important as being a good teacher. Being a dedicated student, a student that asks questions, that continues to develop, that goes further into the system and goes further into relationship with Reiki, allows their students to do the same thing. And this is a very important piece. So then we get back to me. And what is it that has or will shift in the community because I've had cancer? Or what is there something in the community that has actually contributed to my having cancer? Well, that I will never know. Certainly, what has contributed for me in having cancer has been my attitude toward the community, wanting to support it, wanting to be there for people, wanting to do as much as I could, and not seeing that I needed to create boundaries for myself. So this particular little tumor that I had, although I'm not disrespecting it, I'm not saying that it was very little and it won't come back, because it was definitely a big call to attention. That this process has made me realize, has put me in a place of realizing how overextended I was and how easily I am overextended. So one of the things that I must do is to pull back and find my natural boundary. And I feel that once I do this, there will be a shift in the whole Reiki community. And I feel that a lot of my observations of what I would call dysfunctional relationship and dysfunctional patterning of overextension hopefully will be shifted, because I've shifted it in myself. So it gives me more support to do the shifting, because not just because other people will be involved in the sense of feeling guilty, but that other people are involved and I want to be able to assist in the shift, not just for myself, but for them. And it's an interesting dance, I have to say. And then we come to this piece about mystic order. Is that really what Mystic Order is about? And I would say, on some level, yes. Well, some of you might cringe at this, but imagine, you know, I think that one of the basic premise of understanding that we are a mystic order is to acknowledge that we are one. That what happens with one of us shifts everything else. What we teach in our Reiki classes affects all the other Reiki masters and all the other Reiki students. What we hold as our biggest fear affects our students, other Reiki masters, even though we never talk about it. So that's the mystic part, is that we don't have to talk about it. I used to say way long time ago, a kind of trite saying, that, you know, there is no divorce in Reiki and there is no lie. We all know when something isn't the truth, in the sense of not having a true experience. We may not agree. We may not have the same experience of the same circumstance. But that's not the kind of truth I'm talking about. That's that kind of truth assumes that everybody will experience the same thing at the same time under the same circumstance, and that's not my experience. But my truth comes from my experience and my understanding, and because I have my truth, I don't depend on anybody else to validate it. I don't depend on anybody else to have the same experience. So I don't need to force other people to have the same experience. And this is something that I'm really living right now. I really need to be able to live my own experience and my own calling in Reiki. And I need to trust that if it's a true calling, that there'll be a way opened for me to realize this calling without dragging other people into it. It may be that people join me out of their own calling, and we happen to have the same calling. That's really exciting to think about. And that, for me, is also another part of Mystic Order. Could I really talk about Mystic Order and know what it is? Well, no, not really. I feel like we're just imagining, and I don't want to say that in a derogatory way. What I'd like to say is that we don't know really what Mystic Order is or what it entails, but we're getting closer. And I love how she's put this all together. And it gives me a lot of food for thought, and I hope it gives you a lot of food for thought. So what she basically is saying is this again. What does Reiki want to tell the Reiki community through me? And is there some message that is coming through my experience with cancer? Is it about relationship? Is it about understanding the relationship between student and master? And how do I support my students if I know that the shifts in me also produce shifts in my students? All of this being done without exchanging words. It's a great conversation. I think we're just starting it. So thank you, Medina, for this. So we're going to change the tone a little bit and the direction of where we're going. Someone, a Reiki student from the Netherlands, asked this question. Dear Phyllis, can we send Reiki worldwide to the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico? Well, this was a really great question for me because it just seems so simple. And, you know, on a practical level, of course we can. But, you know, in having people send Reiki to what I call natural circumstances, what is it that we really want to see happen, and what is it that Reiki will bring? And I had the opportunity to just wait and muse on this particular question because I really didn't know what to say, and I wanted to have some kind of wise thing to say, and I wasn't coming up with anything, I have to say. And then about 2 weeks later, I got another email, and this is from somebody else, and they were talking about Dr. Emoto's response to the oil spill. So for those of you who don't know who Dr. Emoto is, he's a Japanese scientist who has done a lot of research around the characteristics of, about the characteristics of water, and that water responds to our emotions, and also just simply to words. Like if you put the word love on a glass of water, you know, on a piece of paper and tape it to a glass of water, it changes the actual physical characteristic of water. Now that is amazing. And I just love this because it feels like it has a lot to do with our precepts, especially the one, show gratitude to every living thing. That is so powerful, and we don't really understand the power of it. But this, for me, is where it all connects. So he would like for us to know that there is a prayer that we can send to the Gulf to set an intention of love and healing, that we can perform a miracle in the Gulf of Mexico. Our united energy, he says, speaking this prayer daily, can literally shift the balance of destruction that is happening. We don't have to know how. We just have to recognize the power of love is greater than any power active in the universe today. So, if we can put our attention to looking at this as a situation of love and healing, then perhaps the sending of Reiki will be able to assist in manifesting this. So I would say my question is this really what nature wants? And then I think to myself, well, you know, Reiki will bring everything to balance, and we'll just see what happens. So this is the prayer that Dr. Emoto would like to send out. I send the energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all living creatures in the Gulf of Mexico. to the whales, dolphins, pelicans, fish, shellfish, plankton, corals, algae, to all living creatures. I am sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. So I'm going to read this again. This prayer, I send the energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all living creatures in the Gulf of Mexico. I am sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Show gratitude to every living thing. Is it possible for us simply to send gratitude to the function that that water has for our well-being? Is this gratitude, this outpouring of love, can it change something that is seems to be threatening that benefit, seems to be threatening the natural life of plants and animals who live in this water? It's a very rich question. And out of that, I feel that I finally received a kind of insight into how we can use Reiki in these kinds of circumstances where what I would call natural disasters are happening. Now, you may not see the Gulf as a natural disaster, but you know, man went down and of course they, you know, created the oil well and so on, but there's something natural, a natural force that is happening here that is very important and to understand and maybe to recognize that mankind feels like perhaps that we can control something, but eventually nature takes over again. And personally, I think that's what's happening. Even though it feels like it's destroying itself, I also trust that nature can heal itself, just like our bodies can heal itself. We just have to let it be. So giving the nature gratitude, giving the water gratitude, giving the water a kind of energy that we might call love is really important to allowing the healing to happen. And, well, something's changing inside of me, I can tell. And I would really love to hear about your experiences of sending Reiki to the Gulf. And there's one more question, and luckily we have a little bit of time for it. This is again another shift. Dear Phyllis, I was thinking over some of the things that I have heard over the years about Reiki and some of Takata's stories. I was talking to a master candidate today, and she was having a certain situation with a client. A story came to mind, and then I doubted. So what better than to see if you heard the same story? I heard that when Takata treated someone, if they continued to smoke or continued an unhealthy habit, she would not continue to treat them. For instance, someone with asthma who continued to smoke. Do you remember anything like that? Can you shed light on the subject or point me in the right direction? Well, this is a hard one because I feel that there were lots of different stories about her willingness to treat someone or not. And I don't know what she would have done in any given situation, but I will tell you some of her sort of bottom lines, if you will. For instance, if somebody was smoking, she would use part of the second degree treatment to help them quit smoking. And I think that this, and I know that this was very successful. So I would say that she would treat the smoking as a separate instance. And I don't know what would happen if she had this person with asthma who continued to smoke. I remember a story that she told about a person with MS, multiple sclerosis, and they were very nervous and very, very busy and did a lot of things, and she would treat this person, and then the MS would subside, and they would become active again, out of bed and able to work and so on, and she would say to them, don't get overactive. Don't get nervous. Be sure you take care of yourself. And then they would fall into the same pattern eventually and come back again with MS when they were starting not to be able to walk and not to be able to live in the way that they wanted. So she would treat them again. And eventually, after three or four times, she told the person, unless you're willing to change your life, I'm not willing to treat you. So I don't think that she was so black and white in the sense of, well, if you don't stop smoking, then I'm not going to treat you. But she gave this person, as I recall, three or four times to change. And I think that it's a very interesting conundrum because for me, in my own self and in my own understanding of illness, I feel that Reiki is doing something. Like Reiki seemed to take care of the physical symptoms, for instance, of this person with MS. And what would happen if they kept reviving this condition and then having it be relieved with Reiki? Is there some kind of healing process going on? And just because I get fed up with their unwillingness, seeming unwillingness to change their lives, what might happen if I treated them one more time and they, as we say, saw the light and changed? I don't know. It's something that I don't think I could do, to say I'm going to stop treating you. So in answer to this master candidate, and also to just practitioners out there, you know, people come and we have no idea about what kind of pain story they have inside of them. And it's very important for me that we don't stand in judgment of them in the sense of, you know, taking away Reiki because Reiki's too precious to waste on somebody who won't participate in their own healing. Well, we have absolutely no idea what that really means. What does that mean, not participate? I mean, if they're willing to come and get Reiki treatments, they're willing to come pay for Reiki treatments, then and do a participation in the sense that they really want to do this, then I would say for us to have a judgment about how long it's taking them to, feel this healing process, well, I can't predict how long that will take. Maybe it takes years, and maybe they have to come back time after time, but each time there's something that heals in them a little bit more. So keep giving Reiki. That's my idea. Well, we're out of time again, and I want to thank the listeners for your wonderful questions, and they're becoming more difficult to respond to, which is really great for me. And also, it allows me to go deeper into my own studentship, and that's really fantastic. So thank you very much for this time. We'll be back next week with a wonderful show, and I hope that you will join us, because the theme for the next few shows is research and Reiki. And, you know, I was always resistant to this, but I think I've changed my tune. Okay, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.